Good morning. You are listening to Raven Radio. Today is Tuesday, November 20th, 2012. I'm Holly Keene, and this is Raven News. After absentee ballots counting Monday, Democratic challenger Jonathan Kreis Tompkins has pulled ahead by 28 votes in a race to represent House District 34 in the Alaska Legislature. Kreis Tompkins from Sitka was in a dead heat with Haines Republican incumbent Bill Thomas over the weekend after two questioned ballots from Port Alexander were counted on Friday and evened up the race. The State Division of Elections counted 86 more ballots yesterday. The totals now stand at 4,082 for Thomas and 4,110 for Kreis Tompkins, a difference of 28 votes in favor of the Sitka Democrat. Elections Director Gail Fainumiai says the division has 26 special absentee ballots in hand, which will be counted on Wednesday, along with any other absentee ballots which may arrive overseas. If the election does happen to end in a tie, the state will conduct an automatic recount. If the election ends with a margin of victory of less than half a percentage point, the loser may request a recount at the state's expense. Fainumiai says the recount would be completed in one day. Raven News continues its interview with Lieutenant Lance Leone today. The Coast Guard aviator is the only survivor of a 2010 helicopter crash in which three others from Air Station Sitka died. Yesterday, he talked about the plan to fly to Astoria, Oregon, and exchange one of Air Station Sitka's older model Jayhawks for a new chopper.
It was flying across the country, and we were flying down from Sitka. We were going to rendezvous in Astoria, exchange paperwork on the two different aircrafts, and then the pilots were going to shake hands, swap aircraft, and then we were going to fly back to Sitka, and the other aircraft was going to fly back to Elizabeth City. It's an often done thing in the Coast Guard where our large depot maintenance is all done in Elizabeth City, so we have to switch our aircraft out.
What's it feel like to pick up a new chopper? I mean, is it like driving a car off a lot, or
so? It's an interesting the 6017. I'd actually flown it the whole time I was in Elizabeth City. I had done most of the test flights on it when it came out of the depot maintenance. So I'd flown it once it was so when we say it's brand new, it's like I guess a refurbished. We bought the 60s in 1991 through 1993, I believe that time frame. And they're the same aircraft. Now, they look absolutely gorgeous always because we have some of the best maintainers in the world. But they're not brand new, but they are totally beautifully refurbished. So the 6017 had sat in Elizabeth City, and I'd flown it on cases and in Elizabeth City. So when it was great to go from the J model to the T model. It was like a new aircraft, even though they've just been kind of polished and redone from the inside.
Helicopter 6017 was on its way north when its crew spotted a Coast Guard boat below. They went in for a low pass over the boat, and that's when things went wrong. In today's installment of the interview, Leone describes the accident itself.
We were flying, everything was fine, and then it blew apart when I was underwater, I didn't know any. It felt like the world was shaking apart.
The interview airs and appears online beginning at 8:18 a.m. Part one is already online at kcaw.org. We'll conclude the conversation on Wednesday morning with Leone talking about his recovery from the accident and his future in the Coast Guard. A think tank in Washington, D.C. is launching a program to elevate Native youth who show promise for shaping future Native policy. As APRN's Peter Granitz reports, it's looking to an Alaska Native and recent Mount Edgecombe High School graduate for inspiration.
Tessa Baldwin started Hope for Alaska in high school after her boyfriend committed suicide as a junior. She traveled the state, visiting villages, sharing her story, and oftentimes alienating those who did not want to talk about a sensitive topic.
The elders in my village would look to me and say, "Why would you talk about this? You're going to cause our children to commit suicide if you talk about this."
Baldwin is now a freshman at the University of California, San Diego. She says she misses the cold weather in Kotzebue, her home. This week, she's in Washington, D.C., serving as the model for a new program called Champions for Change. It's an initiative of the Center for Native American Youth at the Aspen Institute.
This actually started last year when 11 of us youth went to the White House to meet the president to talk about our stories of how we overcame the struggles.
The struggles of suicide have ripped at Baldwin for years. Not only did her boyfriend take his life, so did an uncle. She says all over the state, in every village she visited, people opened up to her about the suicide of a friend or family member. Former Senator Byron Dorgan founded the Center for Native American Youth. He also chaired the Senate Indian Affairs Committee while he represented North Dakota. He says what he witnessed in years of travel in Indian country belie the myths from outside. And that's a key reason for starting Champions for Change.
It's just an opportunity to show the country a different face of what is so often reported. They so often report the challenges, the bad news. But I'm telling you, I think there are some remarkable young people doing great, great things and inspirational things on the reservations as well.
Senator Dorgan says many of the details of the program need to be fleshed out, but all the young adults chosen will be flown to Washington, D.C. to share their stories with the White House. The Champions for Change program is looking for applicants who show promise in the future of Indian policy, those who have emerged as young leaders, those who have overcome personal and emotional trouble. In Washington, D.C., I'm Peter Granitz.
Finding quality, affordable childcare for young children can be a challenge anywhere in Alaska. It's especially difficult in rural Alaska's hub communities, where the cost of living is high and space is often hard to find. It becomes a factor in attracting professionals to jobs at regional health and other organizations. As part of the Alaska Public Radio Network series, Being Young in Rural Alaska, producer Ann Hillman takes a look at how some communities are trying to meet the challenge.
At Ilisavik College in Barrow, President Pearl Bauer tries to concentrate on our interview, but she's a little distracted.
Do you want to go sit with Auntie Kayla?
Her 10-month-old daughter is crawling into the hallway. She had a babysitter problem this morning.
We don't have a daycare, a formalized daycare here, so that makes it very difficult because it's all personal caregivers.
Brower is not alone. April Blevin struggled to find childcare when she first moved to Bethel, where there are currently no licensed childcare facilities for children under three.
And when I went to visit houses that had babysitters, you would see one childcare provider with maybe up to 12 children. And in my eyes, it just was not a safe environment or one that I would want my child in.
So a cousin came to live with her.
And then the following year, me and about four other parents went in and through a nanny service, hired a nanny, and she came up. We provided housing, and she kept our five children.
Later, Blevins did find home care she was happy with. Marcy Bish, child care program manager for the state, says the biggest hurdle for many providers getting licensed is background checks. Every person living in the home must pass them, not just the primary care provider.
So a lot of times there's barriers that come up as part of those checks that do not allow somebody or a family member to move forward with the licensing process.
And many people do home daycare for only a few years while their own children are young. Child care centers struggle to be able to pay decent wages, staff turnover is high, and it can be hard to find a qualified person to be the facility administrator under licensing rules. The costs add up to more than most parents can pay. Those are statewide issues. Even in urban areas, the best childcare programs are subsidized by employers. That's how April Blevins is trying to meet the need in Bethel. She works for the Lower Kuskokwim School District and manages its Busy Bees childcare program for children ages 3 to 5. School district employees have preference for spots at the school, and the waiting list is long. LKSD is opening a second facility for children as young as 6 weeks and expects it to be full right away. The staff is employed by the district, so they have better benefits than the independent facility could offer, and they have donated space.
If it hadn't been for the Bethel Alternative School offering us a space, it would have been difficult for us to expand.
Families in Barrow and other North Slope communities are grappling with two problems, a lack of child care facilities and a loss of language. So staff at Ilisavik College created a combined solution, the Language Nest, an early childhood language immersion program. Teacher Tuvokluk Diaz sings Row, Row, Row Your Boat in Inupiaq in a room that looks like a typical preschool, except every bit of the decoration, from the toy caribou to the dolls in the tent, reflect life on the North Slope.
the language. It's going to be put in their heart, instilled in their heart in the beginning, and it's going to go along in when they become adults.
The Language Nest just opened and eventually will accept students ages 0 to 3. While at the school, the kids will only listen to and speak Inupiaq.
You just say simple things, simple commands that you usually do in a home, and that's what we're going to do.
That's teacher Martha Stackhouse. She says that by teaching the children Inupiaq with words that they would typically use at home, they will also teach parents the language. And kids will only be accepted to the program if their parents commit to being involved in the classroom at least 8 hours per month. Program Director Mary Sage says the Language Nest is part of Ilisavik's larger Inupiaq Early Learning Degree.
Under the business track, there'll be some courses that will help them establish their own language nest in their home, anywhere on the North Slope.
Future teachers can earn school credits by working in the current language nest, and the college will teach how to get state daycare licenses. The North Slope Borough is also working to address the need, with a child care task force looking at reopening a borough-run facility. Across the state, as new health care centers and school buildings are built, advocates are pushing to add to the plans to make space for the care and education of the very youngest Alaskans. With help from Jessica Cochran, I'm Ann Hillman.
The new Alaska State Senate majority has announced committee leadership positions. Lawmakers already have announced some Senate leadership positions, including Republican Charlie Huggins of Wasilla as Senate President and John Coghill, Republican North Pole, as Senate Majority Leader. Leadership roles noted Monday for the upcoming session include Anchorage Republican Liesl McGuire as Rules Committee Chair, Sitka Republican Bert Stedman as Chair of Health and Social Services, and Finance Committee co-chairs Kevin Meyer, Republican from Anchorage, and Pete Kelly, Republican from Fairbanks. Republicans hold at least 13 seats in the 20-member Senate, whose 15-member majority includes two Democrats. And that's all for Raven News. KCAW, Sitka.